Okay, so like imagine you're standing in this village church, the year is 1500, and right above you on the chancel arch is this massive, terrifying painting of the Last Judgment.
Oh, right, the one haste and doom.
Yeah, exactly. You literally see your neighbors being dragged into hell mouths. And then near the altar, there's actually a stone carving of a figure showing its, well, bare buttocks.
Yeah, at Preston Bissett, it's so visceral.
It really is. It's vibrant, it's scary, but mostly it's just certain. But within just a generation, that entire world, like the spiritual house they lived in, was going to be completely torn apart.
Torn apart and fundamentally redefined, yeah.
So today, in our exploration into the source material, we are looking at Diarmaid McCulloch's work to understand how the two massive pillars of Western life back then, the Mass and the power of the Pope, began to fracture.
And I mean, we really can't overstate how essential those pillars were to your identity. The Pope wasn't just some distant figurehead, he was the living law.
Right, the absolute final arbiter of truth.
Exactly. And the Mass was literally the moment God physically entered the room.
Yeah.
But there was this massive industry built around it all, the purgatory
Oh,
industry.
yeah, the whole power of the weight.
Yeah, because you weren't just worried about hell, you were looking at a multi-thousand-year sentence in purgatory for your everyday sins before you ever even smelled the incense of heaven.
Which brings in the church's treasury of merit. It's essentially like a massive spiritual bank account.
That's a great way to put it.
Because the church claimed that saints had lived these super holy lives, right? So they accumulated excess merit, like way more than they actually needed to get into heaven.
And the Pope held the keys to that vault.
Yeah, he could just transfer that credit right to you. It was basically a subscription service for the soul. Like if you recited the 15 Avos of St. Bridget every single day for a year, you'd get exactly 5,475 years off your purgatory sentence.
It is incredibly mechanical.
Right. It makes me wonder, did people back then feel like this was just, a clerical confidence trick, like a spiritual pyramid scheme?
Well, to many people, yeah, it really started to look that way. Because the whole question of why we believe had been replaced by, well, how much?
Because the church was the sole gatekeeper.
Exactly. But then the technology completely changed. If the medieval church was like this central server controlling all the information, the printing press comes along and acts as a decentralized network.
Well, and they couldn't just shut down.
Right. It was an absolute information revolution.
And that fueled the Ad Fontes movement, right?
Sure.
The push to go back to the original sources, which wasn't just for scholars, it was basically a massive fact check.
Oh, totally. Just imagine being a devout believer and suddenly discovering that the Latin Bible you've trusted for 1,000 years had a massive mistranslation about Moses.
Oh, wait, the one where he comes down the mountain with horns.
Yeah, instead of a shining face, Jerome's Vulgate literally gave Moses horns. Or finding out that the Donation of Constantine, the document that gave the Pope his political power, was just a total linguistic forgery.
Wow. So reading becomes this solo activity,
Yeah.
which shifts religion entirely.
Yes. Sitting alone with a printed book changes your relationship with God from a public theatrical ritual to a very private mental experience. You go from being a spectator to being a judge.
But, okay, while Northern Europe is having this huge intellectual crisis, the South is dealing with a literal crisis of survival.
Right, the Ottoman Empire. In 1526, they absolutely smash the Hungarian army at Mohacs.
So the Turk isn't just a distant enemy, they're this terrifying existential threat right at the gate.
And that terror creates the Iberian exception. In places like Spain and Portugal, this fear led to a super militant defensive form of Catholicism.
Right. They didn't just want you to conform, they wanted purity of blood.
Exactly. The Inquisition wasn't just hunting for wrong theological ideas. They were hunting for Jewish or Muslim ancestry, which they called a taint.
Which gives us figures like Cardinal Zamaines.
Yes. A guy who lived like a humble barefoot monk, but also burned thousands of non-Christian books and basically spearheaded the Inquisition.
But I have to push back a bit on the missionary side of this militancy when it reached the New World.
Oh, how so?
Well, it felt less like sharing the gospel and more like a crusade by another name. They use this document called the Requirement.
Oh, right, the
Yeah,
requirement.
they'd read it to the indigenous people in Spanish, which obviously they didn't understand. And it basically said, hey, the Pope owns the world, so submit or we'll wage a just war on you. It just seems like an exercise in power disguised as theology.
I mean, you're not wrong. It was the ultimate expression of the old world desperately trying to assert total control, right as that control was slipping away back home.
So the whole divided house of Europe was really built on this massive tension.
Yeah, the internal doubt caused by the printing press and the external fear caused by the sword.
So we go from this shared ritualistic reality to a world of individual fact-checking and militant nationalism. The printing press made knowledge uniform for the very first time,
giving everyone the exact same corrected text to argue over.
Right. But it really makes me wonder about us today.
How do you mean?
Well, if our digital age is doing the exact opposite, like making information totally fragmented and ununiform, are we on the verge of a reverse reformation? Like a world where finding any shared truth just becomes completely impossible?
Wow, that is a really fascinating question.
Definitely something to mull over until next time. Thanks for joining me on this exploration into the source material.